You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And it's Monday, it's 2 o'clock Eastern, and that must mean it's time for the M Squared TechCast at mitechnews.tv. Straight out of Podcast Detroit. We got a fine show for you today, a bunch of good guests. Mike, why don't you introduce our first guest here?
Sure. We have Stephanie Sharp, who's calling in from Vancouver. And her company is based up there, one of our Canadian cousins. And I want to make sure I get it right. It's 3DQ Technology, right?
3DQ Systems, yep.
Systems, okay. And so, obviously, as the name implies, 3D products. You have a little bit different wrinkle. You were describing your process to me last week where your software creates the products rather than creating a mold to create the products, but I'm probably not doing it justice. So why don't you give us a better explanation?
Sure. So you pretty much have it right. We do what's called digital manufacturing. And in other words, we have the computers run most of the manufacturing process, and we do that by using 3D printers. So we have software running a whole bunch of 3D printers. We've got 45 running right now. Ooh. And we're using those to, of course, produce all kinds of product right now for COVID as well as industry.
So you you were doing some stuff that I hadn't heard before, like you were doing the swabs. I'd heard all, you know, we've seen the face shields and the bands and all that jazz. But when you said the swabs, I were really, how, why don't you explain that to folks? Because it kind of, I've never heard of that one before.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So, I mean, this is, I guess, you know, situations like this drive innovation. So one of the challenges is a COVID testing swabs are in short supply worldwide. And the typical swab, they have a plastic handle, they have nylon, what they call flocking, you know, kind of like a Q-tip. And then they have a machine that sticks the nylon onto the end of the swab and off it goes. And when the government gave us a call and said, hey, we've got a shortage of these swabs, is there anything you can do with 3D printing? We thought, why not? We could just we could have the 3D printers make a little collection design at the end of a plastic handle. And that's what we did. So we're just waiting for approvals, regulatory approvals right now.
Huh.
So how many of those are you planning on making?
Well, with our current setup, which as I say is five, what we call Q-pods, which is 3D printing networks. So that's 45 printers. We can produce about 8,000 swabs a day. Ooh. And what we're talking to the government about is increasing the number of machines and going for about 30,000 swabs a day.
Wow, that's amazing.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the company, its background, how long it's been around, that kind of thing, and how it got into the sort of additive manufacturing business?
Sure. So we've been around since 2018. But my co-founder actually invented the technology that we use for the digital manufacturing. So he's been in 3D printing since 2015. And what he noticed, he was in early days on 3D printing and designed all kinds of cool things. And everybody was, oh, can you make this? Can you make that? And what he discovered very quickly with 3D printers, once the printer prints your object, it just sits there waiting for you to come and scrape the part off the printer. And then you have to put in taper glue or clean the surface and start the next print. So he said, so it was sitting there all day when he wasn't home. So he said, what if I could run this remotely with software? And so that's what he invented. And then ran that on his own for his own designs for a couple of years. And then was talking to me about, could I turn this into a business? And we looked at it and said, yeah, actually, this would be really useful for lots and lots of companies because it's very efficient mass production when it's run by software.
Now, sure. One of the things you mentioned when we were discussing last week is you are actually working with the Michigan company right now. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in fact, we launched our technology in Michigan at a trade show in Detroit called Rapid Plus TCT. And the first company to install our system was MCPP, which is the Mitsubishi Chemical Performance Polymers division or company that's part of the Mitsubishi group. And they make a whole bunch of different materials for 3D printing. So they wanted high volume production in order to rapidly test all their new materials and their new colors and stuff. And through them, we've been introduced to other companies that in your area, like Illinois and Massachusetts, and we're working with them on producing COVID supplies and also other products. One of the interesting companies we're working with actually is called 3D Print Life, and they have a material that has copper in it, and so which is an antimicrobial. So they're thinking, well, they can print cases for cell phones and stuff, and then it's antimicrobial, which helps in terms of surface, surface disinfecting on a continuous basis.
So we ask these questions. I know this is obviously not anybody's main business, but now it's becoming, I wouldn't say a main business, but it's becoming a major part of their business. How big is what you're doing for the Canadian, PPE situation? Percentage-wise, how big is that part of your business now?
Right now, it's about 50% of our business. A lot of face shields, as you said. We're also ramping up. We've developed a 3D printed electric pump for hands-free sanitizer. Mm-hmm. So we 3D print the pump, and then you just wave your hand under it and get sanitizer because there's a shortage of pumps now. And then we've got about 50% is various companies that need, they just need supply. And that's kind of COVID related in the sense that their supply chains are broken because people have shut down in different parts of the world. And so now they can't get their normal, supplies. So I guess everything we're doing is kind of driven by COVID, but not all directly in response to it.
On the flip side, whenever this nightmare ends, is this something that you think you might stay involved in some way? And then sense of PPE supplies?
Yeah, well, PPE, I don't know specifically. I guess it depends on what the demand will be. But the test swabs, certainly we could do other nasopharyngeal swabs. It doesn't have to just be for COVID. We could do those continuing. The hand sanitizer pumps, that might become a long-term piece. It's really hard to tell right now, but that's what we're kind of looking at that ourselves. We're only a few weeks in. I mean, it feels like it's been forever.
Yeah.
But when you really look at the timeline, it's all pretty new.
Yeah, but it's sometimes it feels like we had a heck of a year last week, that kind of thing.
April was the longest month that I can remember in a long time. By the end of the month, I was going stir crazy, So
how much of your business is actually making 3D printed objects for clients versus the software? Because you do both, right?
Yeah. So our main business is technically putting the systems together, which are a combination of hardware and software. But now we are spending a great deal of our time producing product. The interesting thing is that with digital manufacturing, one of the things you need to do is continuously refine, because it's such a new technology, you have to continuously refine your system, and you need a high volume of production to capture the data in order to know what to fix, like what's working, what's not working, what could be more efficient. So all of the product that we're producing is getting us that data. So for us, it's kind of working in terms of developing the system, and we would have to be printing products anyway for our research and development. Right. So now we're printing it, and we're printing higher volumes than we would have been. So before COVID, just so you know, like 8 weeks ago, we had one QPod, which is 9 printers, and now we have 5 and we're planning to put another 5 in the next month or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what materials are you using in your research? Have you gotten into some of the more exotic materials, composites, powdered metals, that kind of thing, or are you still doing primarily polymers?
Primarily the thermoplastics, polymers. We do a lot with PLA, ABS. That's just the typical stuff that you see with 3D printing. But we're very excited. We're working with a company that has a biodegradable nylon, and we're going to be testing that in the next few weeks. And we are looking at some of the metal containing like the copper that I was talking about. So that type of filament. And there's another filament we're actually hoping to try out sometime soon, which mimics bone. So it's really good for doctors and surgeons who want, or even medical students who want to try cutting something that feels and acts like bone. So you can 3D print, say, I don't know, if a surgeon's going to, you know, operate on my arm, maybe on the arm bone, put plates in, they can print a replica, and then they can cut into this replica and say, oh, you know, that this should be tweaked or that should be tweaked, and you're not doing that on a live patient.
Yeah, yeah. Or a jawbone for a dentist, maybe, something like that. Yeah.
That exactly. You could do, really, you could do anything. And I think it's mostly, you know, useful for instance, if you're going to be screwing plates in and all that kind of stuff, you want to test it out before you put it on a patient.
All right. We're in our final minute. So this is your opportunity to do a shameless plug and tell people how they can reach out to you and maybe work with your company going forward.
Yeah, for sure. So our website is 3DQUE.com. So 3DQ.com. And if you want to see some of the stuff we're doing for COVID, right at the top of the page, it says medical products. Just click on that and you can go take a look at our products. And on our website, we also have our systems. Thank you for having me.
And we'll be right back. Right, Matt, take us out.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute. In fact, if all goes well, exactly 60 seconds. With another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching at PodcastDetroit.com, MITechNews.tv, and wherever fine podcasts may be found.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Nope. And
here
hey,
it's
go.
Matt Rausch. Hello.
I'm Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. We are joined for this segment by Lisa Kijawa, who is associate. Why don't you give me your title? Because I know it has changed fairly recently.
I'm the Associate Provost for Enrollment and Outreach.
Okay. And that's at my employer, Lawrence Technological University. So it's a shameless plug time for pretty much this whole segment here. But we just announced something last week that we're pretty excited about, and that is that we are planning on bringing students back to campus for fall semester, which starts August 24th. Lisa, why don't you give us some of the details on it?
Yeah, so, you know, it's been really interesting, Matt, because both on the side of current students and on the side of new students, they were clamoring for engagement. They wanted to talk to us. So we've been, since the shutdown happened, extremely busy, which for us, we're happy about that. Yep. And so the faculty, particularly and the administration, have been working so hard at identifying how we will come back, what are the protocols, the precautions, the measures in place to keep people safe and healthy, but to be able to bring everybody back on ground. And so the president put out a letter last week saying we're going to do just that. And we have a plan for housing. We have a plan for the classrooms. We have a plan for the entire campus. So that's going to be a positive thing. And we're already communicating that with our parents and students.
So why don't you communicate that with us? How are you going to do that? Everyone's wondering, are you going to have 6-foot separation? Are you going to have classrooms only 50% full? How are you going to do it?
So let's start with the classrooms. So they're going to do six feet distancing. Now, keep in mind that obviously this is all going to change. That's the point about this being very fluid, because it keeps changing. So we have to look at, is there another executive order? Is there another, you know, can you have more than this number of people in a classroom? So the other point is there sanitary, there's over 100 sanitary machines throughout campus. There's also social distancing Blue Devils on the ground, which will also be in the hallways. So when students leave class, they follow that as well. All students have to wear masks, whether they're, if they're in a classroom or in the hallway, you know, if they're just studying somewhere by themselves, they don't have to. They're looking at a variety of different things. So for example, let's say I have a class and it meets 2 days a week. Then maybe, and there's 32 students in a classroom, then 15 or 16 would come on Monday and the other 15 or 16 would Zoom from their dorm room. And then that would be reversed on Wednesday. Now, again, this is all up for interpretation, because we're going to continuously identify more that's coming from the governor. So in the residence hall, I think they have a fabulous plan. So when you come in, you're going to get a packet, a health and safety packet. You're going to be assigned a toilet, a desk, a bed, a shower, and a sink. And that's that whole trace testing, so that every, you know, if I get number one toilet, I get number one a sink, I get number one shower, right? So that's a positive thing. We're going to do the number of students we have on campus. We're not minimizing or trying to, unless a student requests it. So that's the plan thus far. We're going to start at the same time, which is August 24th. We're going to end 3 weeks right after Thanksgiving, and the last 3 weeks will be online. And that will help. Then they'll leave, they go home, they do, you know, an exam or whatever they're doing. And then when they come back in January. So people aren't coming and going to, and, you know, be able to, again, do the campus a deep clean and, you know, start up back in January.
Now, the dormitories, I don't know how you have them set up. Are they single, one person to a room, or are they shared rooms, or how are they set up?
It's two people to a room. So we have apartment style, which could have four people, and we have community style, which could have two people. But we're not going to, just a little tidbit. The only reason why these bigger universities are saying we're going to do it one, two, is because they don't have full housing. Lawrence Tech has full housing. And yeah. So we're looking at identifying opportunities. Like, for example, with the apartment style living on campus, that's not going to change because there's guidance for apartments everywhere. It's the way we're going to do the community based. And that, I think the Dean of Students and the Housing Residence Hall Director did a fabulous job. They have everything identified. So
what you're saying then is that every student in a communal dorm setting where you have communal restroom facilities and communal shower facilities, they will be assigned to a specific place within those facilities, and then there will be a limited number of people using them, and you will know who they are.
Exactly.
Which just in case something does happen, makes contact tracing a whole lot easier.
100%. The other thing, when they come on campus, you'll have to fill out the form like we all do now, which asks you 5 or 6 questions. And if you answer yes to any one of them, then you will be isolated and they'll have an area for isolation.
Okay.
Now, I guess what you've been doing previous the last couple of months has all been virtual. And how has that worked out?
Oh my gosh. I just have to say, I will say that I'm more proud of LTU because we're a private technological university. And as a result of that, we were faster getting to the point of putting everything online and even the Office of Admissions with putting all virtual presentations, appointments. We have now a virtual orientation fully online. All the placement assessments are online. We have students moving through the process if it was on ground. So we move so quickly and so fast. The interesting thing is students want that engagement. They missed out on so much opportunity that they're waiting to get to that next accomplishment. And so it's been very easy to communicate with them because they keep responding. So that's a plus for us. And Matt and I had the opportunity to do these porch visits with our Blue Devil. We identified.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that.
We identified some students and we went and congratulated them and brought them some LTU swag. And Matt can tell you, we were both blown away about both the parents and the students. They were so happy, and it made us feel so good that, you know, they want to get to that next level, and that next level is LTU.
Yeah, we chose a bunch of students that ran more or less at random and gave them a visit with all appropriate social distancing measures in place from Blue, our mascot, and Lisa and some of the other staff. And it was a very heartwarming experience because they're so excited about, you know, going to college and going to LTU. And you can tell they just are really fired up about it. And it was a lot of fun. It was very cool. And that's the kind of thing that you get at a smaller school. Lisa, the one thing I wanted to stress to people also is that Lawrence Tech is known for small class sizes and a low student faculty ratio of, I think it's 11 to 1 right now. So, I mean, we don't have lectures with 400 people in them. So we don't have that problem that a lot of the big, you know, state schools might have. We have a lot of classes that are like 10 to 15 people, right? So yes, it is a heck of a lot easier to stay 6 feet apart. Talking a class of 15 people. So.
Yeah. And then but I imagine you have labs. Are the labs going to be kind of like the way you describe, or you're going to alternate? You know, some people, how can you do a lab virtually though? Can you do a lab virtually?
Or? Well, actually they did the labs virtually when in the spring, when we had to go fully on shutdown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, students liked it, but really didn't like it. And it's only because of the kinds of degrees we offer. I mean, everything is hands-on. So, right. So that's where the faculty spent a lot of time, is looking at how we could do this better, but do it on ground. Mm-hmm. So we went around, they measured every classroom, every lab space, every project where there's project-based learning going on, the studios, all of that, to identify if we have this many people, how could we alter the space? If we have this many people, how could we alter the space? So they have a lot of different plans. And again, that's the positive, as Matt said, about us being a small private, but also very entrepreneurial. They're looking for creative ways to do things, right? So that's what they're doing. And then the hope is that by the middle of July, we'll know more about, okay, now she says you can have 100 people outside. Well, can you have 40 inside? Because as Matt said, if that's the case, we're not going to have an issue because
yeah,
you don't have big classes.
Yeah, I went to the University of Michigan. In my freshman year, we had like 600 in a lecture hall. I haven't heard much out of the big schools how they're going to handle this, because I think they're still trying to sort it all out. So,
well, I would have to think that the 600 person lecture is still going to be, you know, virtual, still going to be online. I went to a smaller school. I went to Albion College, and the biggest class I ever had was a freshman physics class, and I don't think it even had 30 people in it. It was like 28 people, and that was the biggest class I ever had there. So,
interesting thing is, so I know Matt knows this, and Mike, you might have read, but there was an article in the newspaper, I want to say maybe a month ago, and it talked about 26% of the students in Michigan rethinking their first choice. Yeah. And that rethinking was about a public university for all the reasons you just said. Uh-huh. If you're a parent and you're thinking, well, wait a minute, I need them to be closer to home. That's us. If you're a parent and you say, well, you know, I need them to be a smaller environment. That's us. If there's a lot of easier ways we can make this work for our staff, our faculty, and our students. And as I said, we welcome all those students to come to LTU. If you're rethinking that choice, come on over, because we have a better opportunity for you here.
Okay, I guess that was a shameless plug, but we'll save that one for later. But how much could you expand? I mean, I think you're, what, 2,000, 3,000, somewhere in that ballpark, right?
Yeah, around 3,500 students, close to 1,000 that live on campus.
How many more could you accommodate? You just invited the world to apply, so how many more could you handle?
I think we could go up to 5,000. That's our goal.
Really? Okay. Interesting.
That's sort of the edge of being a small school. You can't, you know, if you're over 5,000 students, it's hard to call yourself a small school.
So, yes, you know. Right.
Okay. And then the sports program, I know obviously it's outdoors for football and things like that. What's your thinking along those lines? Have you figured that out yet?
So I don't want to speak for our dean of students, but he just met with the president and the NAIA, and they have guidelines, and they're going to follow everything related to CDC guidelines and what the NIA says. Excuse me. But bottom line is sports will start in the fall. So as, again, we progress and we see more what those guidelines are, depending upon how many people we can have in the stands or different things like that. So, but yes, sports will start and we're going to move forward on that.
Yeah, I'm a season's ticket holder for the University of Michigan football.
I know.
And I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, if they do 6 feet apart, maybe you'll get 20 or 30,000 people in there. And there's 90,000 season ticket holders. So they keep telling us stuff, but they haven't figured that out yet either.
Yes.
So.
Well, I know the NAIA, Mike, our sanctioning authority, basically delayed the start of football season. So we lost our first two games that were we're going to have two games in August, actually. Right. And those games have been canceled. Huh. So we're going to apparently play an 8-game season instead of a 10-game season. And it's going to start sometime after Labor Day.
Yeah,
that's as much as I know about football. I don't know anything about any of the indoor sports. Is volleyball's a fall sport, right?
Yeah, I think it's fall and spring. Yeah,
and that's indoor. But I haven't heard anything about volleyball yet. And basketball, we don't have to worry about until November. So
that's right. Yes. Who knows what'll happen?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. We're in our last minute, so you've already given your shameless plug, but I'll let you do it again.
Okay.
So
I just want to say, you know, LTU is a special place. The students here mean very much to all of us. Our students are some of the best. That's why they get such great jobs after they leave us. And we want more of those types of students that want a private technological focus. That's what I said to many people. It's like, this is your moment. This is your moment for these young people who had to go through so much and so much was taken from them.
Yeah.
Come to LTU and you'll get it all back.
Okay. And right. I'm sure there's a website. Would you like to provide that address?
LTU.edu/admissions or admissions@LTU.edu. Look us up. Come see us. Call us. Happy to talk to you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Lisa Kiowa, Associate Provost at my employer, Lawrence Technological University. We'll be back in just a moment with another segment of the M2 TechCast. For right now, it's Matt Rapsch.
And Mike Brennan.
Thanks,
and
guys.
All right, see you.
Take care, Lisa.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M2 TechCast.
And we have a repeat offender, Richard Steenan. Richard and I go way back. Gosh, we go way back. When he started RustNet, about the same time I started MI Tech News, 20-odd years ago.
Yeah, closer to 28.
28 years ago. And then
some of the years have been exceeding the odds, like this one. Yeah, right.
Yes, so Richard and I go way back, and so he's written a number of books, like There Will Be Cyber War, which I read, and the Chinese are going to kick our butt in that book. I'll tell you, they're fighting the next war while we're still fighting the last war, right? So
yeah, very true.
But we won't get into all that. That's not what the topic is today. It's more of, there's a lot of websites out there that are trying to get people to log in for one reason or another that are going to provide COVID-19 aid or advice or you name it. So what kind of warnings would you offer folks about, how do you sort out the good from the bad, Richard?
Yeah, it's always a challenge. And the bad guys take advantage of the current hysteria, whatever it is, right? So it could be a volcano, it could be an earthquake, whatever. They're going to latch onto that and get you to click quickly without thinking and hovering over it to see where the URL actually leads you. And right now we've got just a combination of scammable events, right? The Treasury is issuing checks to everybody. The insurance companies might have something to say to a business owner about COVID. Your unemployment registration has got to go through, which means going back and forth, you know, emails and clicking on links. So it's almost like you're getting trained to just click on a link and go there and fill out the form, give them your information and move on. And of course, they're going to ask you to log in. And as you're logging in, you're giving away your credentials to do that. So it's just like the old scams, phishing scams that you would fall for, only it's got a COVID flavor to it that you're more likely to click on.
Yeah, for instance, getting due unemployment, week ago they announced there's 340,000 potentially fraudulent claims out there just in Michigan.
Sure.
Out of a million or so total. So that's like a third that could be criminals that they're not totally sure yet, but that's what they're thinking. So that's a pretty big number.
Yeah. No, it's probably a lot smaller than that are actual cyber criminals, because giving away money is a sure way to encourage fraud. You know, right. So people that are claiming things that they shouldn't, basically. Just like the vast majority of credit card theft is by the owner of the credit card, right? Who denies a claim that they paid for something and cancels their credit card or whatever. So same thing, but for sure, you know, somebody living in Eastern Europe doesn't need as much money as we do here to live on. So if they can make $1,000 a month stealing stuff from people, they'll do it.
Yeah.
So what's the latest? Ransomware? What's up with that lately? I haven't, you know, because of the pandemic and other things, I haven't heard nearly as much about it lately. But I would imagine it hasn't gone away.
No, it has not gone away. It's still fully in force. It seems to have taken a twist where it's morphed into combined ransomware. You know, we've encrypted all of your stuff and pay us to get the decryption key, plus extortion. So not only did we encrypt all your stuff, but we stole all your stuff. And we're going to release, you know, embarrassing emails or things you wouldn't like to see in public, etc. I think one of the silly ones was, a state system, right? Most states are fairly transparent. This would never work in Florida, where everything is transparent, right? There's no such thing as private email if you're working for a university or in the government in Florida, which is a great defense against that kind of extortion and great advice for anybody. Never do anything that you wouldn't want to see in the front pages of the paper.
Yeah, never write anything down that if you write something down, invariably somebody's going to see it, whether you like it or not. And, so be wary of that, right?
Yep. Just like when you're posting on social media.
Yeah.
Someday, you know, so you're on Reddit, which feels like you are anonymous, right? Because you just make a name up like that. But someday you're going to say something so outrageous that somebody will dox you, right? They'll figure out who you are from all the things you've said. And now everything you've ever said, you know, your racial racist stuff or your pro-Trump or anti-Trump stuff will be associated with your name. And, you know, you may not have wanted that. So anonymity is not a good protection.
Yeah, not all your Facebook friends are actually your friends, right?
No,
this is true.
Definitely not. So what else is going out there in cybercrime land that besides all the COVID-19 scams? What else? What's the big thing on the horizon right now?
Well, the huge thing is that, you know, most organizations had plans to move to some sort of cloud architecture, right? So, and that involved getting people secure access from any device wherever they are. And We talked about, you know, people getting access from coffee shops, which we don't go to anymore. But the first 2 weeks in March were the most dramatic change in IT infrastructure probably since the invention of the mini computer, because every single company sent everyone home. So all of a sudden they went from 5% of their workforce working from home to 100% and shutting down offices and trying to get out of their leases and, you know, sending the security forces home that used to guard those offices. Dramatic change. So they I've heard people describe it as 5 years of plans were compressed into 2 weeks. Tremendous expense. Some organizations had to buy computers for everybody because they didn't have adequate computers at home. And if you tried to buy a monitor or a headset or a microphone in the last 2 months, you realize that they're impossible to get. And at the worst possible time, because the supply chain from Asia was shut down, 3 months before because of their own COVID problems. So we ended up with, just a drastic impact on supply of electronic goods into the U.S. And refrigerators, I can tell you, because our refrigerator died and we couldn't find one until it was deliverable in end of July. And even then,
That happens. That happened to a friend of my wife. He lost his refrigerator, and it's like a 6 week delay to get a new refrigerator.
Yeah, good thing.
You used to be able to just walk into ABC Warehouse and it would be delivered the next day, but not
exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. So, it's a good thing mattresses are made mostly in the United States, because we know mattresses are the hottest selling thing there are. They're pop-up stores all over and they'd be all out of business. Yep. But that change was dramatic for the business network, because the business network used to be all about having a corporate network, connecting all the offices. People would go into an office, they'd get on a network that was secured, and then they'd do their thing, and they'd be monitored and all the rest. Now everybody's doing that from home. So what happened is the corporate network just extended to everybody's home, increasing the attack surface, as we like to say, and just dramatically changing the prospects for companies that had solutions around that. So the ones that were enabling so-called secure access edge for the cloud, which is basically a proxy service that you reach over SSL, or the guys doing zero trust networking, all of them have had tremendous quarters. And I don't see an end to that, because we may be lifting some of the restrictions and people are starting to go to work, but most companies, I think, will have a flexible work from home schedule.
Well, that's what the non-teaching staff at Lawrence Tech is doing. Most of us are back in the office maybe 1 or 2 days a week, that's about how often I really need to be there, truth be told. And that's true for a lot of people, but other than that, I mean, I talk to people on the phone and I write up stories for magazines and websites. I can do that from anywhere. So
yeah, that's right. That's right. You have to go into the office to get your mail, and who sends mail anymore? So other than me, because I mail books out to people, now they can get them.
One of the things that what I do every day is I go on a long bike ride. That's my big exercise.
Good for you.
And part of that is going through the parking lot by the U of M hospital. And before COVID, there was never any parking spaces in there. And now it's only half full. It's telling me that the essential staff are in the hospital, but all the support staff are at home. Yep. So I really think, And I think that corporations have seen, people have been wanting this for a long time. It's now here and they're thinking, well, it's actually working. Why do we want to go back to the old way, right?
Yeah. The first time I ever heard anybody say, oh, the world's changed, we're all going to work from home, was 1994, I think, when the Summer Olympics were in Atlanta. And Coca-Cola told everybody to work from home because the traffic would be so bad.
Right.
And that was when we started saying, oh, now we're going to work from home. Then, of course, the dot-com boom. And we thought the same thing, because you can do it. Why have this expensive office space? But even one of my last corporate jobs, the CEO insisted everybody work from the office in San Jose.
It's become much more a matter of personal preference and control. And,
Yeah. And the great thing is we've gotten over all the kind of professional hurdles, because it used to be really embarrassing if you're working from home and your kids started screaming or your dog is barking or they're mowing the lawn outside. But now we just accept it. And it's kind of cool to have the kids show up and expose a little bit more of somebody's life. So we've changed in our expectations of what work from home is, right?
It's, yeah, I was watching a one of the political chat shows last week, and the host cat made an appearance on the couch behind him, and and it started grooming herself. You know?
It's a Zoom rule. If somebody shows their cat, everybody else has to get their cat and introduce them to each other. So the other, you know, back to kind of a, you know, COVID fallout, I had one guy described to me, he says, you know, the average dwell time of a hacker on a corporate network after they get in is as high as 270 days before they're discovered and the breach is announced afterwards. So if during this COVID, we know the attack frequency is much, much higher. So some of the really bad guys are actually breaking into networks right now, and we won't hear about them until probably October, November of this year. Yeah. And that's when all the news of all the big breaches will occur. And it'll be directly associated with this time frame.
Okay. We got a little over a minute left, so go ahead, Richard. Tell folks, what's your latest book you have out? I know you just put out a new one, right?
Yeah, I did. Collated all of my essays that I wrote in Forbes and put them in a book, collected essays. And that, you know, that would be of interest to my fan base, which appears to be about two people, not including family members.
Me too.
And, but also those who, you know, kind of want to walk through historically, you know, what was this industry analyst thinking over that time. But my real project during COVID has been to finish writing a book that I started 8 years ago called Curmudgeon, How to Succeed as an Industry Analyst. Wow. So it's a how-to book for anybody interested in that line of work.
Okay.
Okay.
And if folks want to look at your book collection, other than going to Amazon and searching for your name, I'm sure you have a website where they're all parked, right?
Yeah, all the books are parked at ithpress.com, itharvest-press.com.
Okay. I've always wondered, how did you come up with the name IT Harvest?
When we were thinking of starting the company, it was based on gathering data, and we were invited to a olive harvest in Healdsburg, California. And it was just, you know, it was fall and everything is so lush and people are harvesting stuff that the name just came to us.
Oh, okay. We're going to have to leave it at that, Mr. Harvest. And we'll have you back here real soon. But right now we got to go to commercial break and then one more guest. So this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you've been watching MI Tech TV.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, we're back. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching the M Squared TechCast and mitechnews.tv.
Yep. And we have with us, once again, who has been a constant guest of ours, because he's the man that understands what's going on where no one else seems to, Fred Brown. And Fred is an infectious disease expert, works with a number of states and countries, affiliated through Johns Hopkins, got all the great credentials. And we hear stuff from him that we're typically not, I'm not hearing, I don't know about you, Matt, but I'm not hearing it from anybody else other than Fred's kind of giving us the real story here. So
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, so, it's a pleasure.
Let's talk about a couple of things. You mentioned that the virus, now we've discovered, is smart, and the antibody testing and the vaccines, it's outwitting some of these things. Yes.
Yes, it's sort of interesting. Sugars, it turns out sugars play a big role.
And what we found out, well, a couple things. We've known for a while that viruses have special devices to avoid the immune system. And the SARS-2 virus, this COVID virus 19, is especially good at it. When we were studying HIV a few years ago, we noticed it had four extra genes to create four extra proteins. And we were wondering, why does it have genes to create four extra proteins? And the reason it has it, these are called open reading frame frames on the virus, these ORFs. They code for this different protein. And what the HIV virus will do is it'll shoot out four different kinds of proteins that then distract our immune system from what it should be going after, which is the actual virus itself. So the virus will go out, and create these different proteins, our immune system will get confused. We've got two kinds of immune systems. The first immune system we have is a lymphoid immune system, and that's what we hear about with the beta interferon and the T cells, and our antibodies are stimulated, and we try to hit the virus before it hits the cell. So that's the lymphoid system. Then we have a myeloid system. So once the virus actually enters the cell, that's when you hear about the cytokine response. And that kills the virus once it gets into the cell. So we have an exterior one and an interior one. And what's different about the SARS virus is it actually has ways of deflecting both immune systems. So our first immune system, like I said, when we studied HIV, it had a way of deflecting the lymphoid system. It would shoot out four different proteins, and then it would go ahead and attack our cells, because our virus was our immune system was what they called muted. We were so busy following these other proteins around that we missed the big one, and that's exactly what SARS does. They have we've identified something called the ORF3B. It's an open reading frame, and then we number them 3, 4, 5, 6. This is ORF3B, and ORF3B is particularly good at the SARS virus, is particularly good at creating a protein that distracts our cells, our immune system, lymphoid cells. And so what happens is we don't respond as much as we should to the attack. We're busy fighting off other proteins that confuse our immune system. So when we finally do hit the cytokine system, which attacks the virus once it hit the cell, the cytokine system says, oh my gosh, we have a lot more than we were anticipating. We should have been killing off a lot more of this stuff than we did. So it suddenly shuts on what they call a cytokine of super, it tends to go overboard. And so not it mutes, so what the viruses do cleverly is they mute one side of our immune system and they force us to over-respond in the other side. And so you're seeing a lot of deaths as a result of this over-response. That's a cytokine storm on the one hand, and a lot of extra infection and heavy viral load that we wouldn't expect on the other hand. So it's a particularly tricky virus, it turns out.
I'm amazed. I just had no idea viruses were as intelligent, smart, what do you want to call them, as they apparently seem to be, right? It's just amazing.
What's interesting is that these are just such simple, tiny organisms. They don't even have DNA in them. They only have RNA. And it's just, if you understand, it's my assumption, at least from evolution, that this is just blind luck. There just happens to be one of them that can do this. And so more of that kind of virus will reproduce, right? That's how it works.
We select for it, absolutely. And and our concern is that we actually have a vaccine or a drug, we're going to start selecting for even we find out that there are three different ORF3Bs. One of them is particularly virulent, and we're concerned that if we do it wrong, we're going to select for this particularly virulent one, and it could really hurt us badly. I mean, we're talking about people who die very rapidly as a result of having this particular one in their body.
That's why you have to be so careful in vaccine development, right?
Yes, we can sometimes we can sometimes help the vaccine, help the virus by mistake. That's very unfortunate when that occurs. We've had that happen with one of our one vaccine we did about 20 years ago, and it turned out to be very damaging. But we're hoping it won't happen this time.
Another thing that you mentioned in your talking points was blood type. O or A seems to be a factor.
That's right. That's right. So we've known this for a little bit of time. We've known this with the SARS virus. What happens with the virus is that the virus is very sugar-coated. It's glycoproteinated, they call it. So they have all these glycans or sugars that are attached to the virus. And And it turns out that one of the sugars its primary focus of attack is the ACE2 receptor on our cells. Right next to the A2 receptor on our cells is the sugars that we create. It's on the autosomal gene 3, but we create sugars that actually type our blood. So the reason that we have a type A, type B, type O blood is because of sugars that are on the proteins of the blood. And these sugars then have a response. They have the antigen, and so you'll have a response. If you're O, you'll have antibodies to both the A and the B variants. If you're type and so on. So what they found in a couple of different studies, which is interesting, they found in China, in France, and then most recently with 23andMe, they actually looked at 750,000 different results of people having COVID and having their blood type, and they found that people with type A blood actually were at a higher risk of dying from a bad response and being more infected than those with type O blood.
Hmm.
And we think, now we don't know everything yet, but we think the reason for that is that that the type O will have the antibody to these sugars that are encapsulating this, especially the spike protein of the virus. And so we will actually, the type O's, I'm a type O's. so we're going to attack the virus more than people with type A, because the type A will have a similar type of sugar coating on it that fools us into thinking.
Were the other two blood types B and AB?
That's right.
Was there anything involving them in this, or is it just type A and O that they
studied? So far, we've only looked at A and O. We believe that the same thing is going to be true about B, and if it's true about A and B, it'll probably be even worse for the ABs. Now, the ABs, of course, are fairly rare, as is B, but A's and O's are pretty marked. Now, it's about a 9 to 19% improvement, according to 23andMe. So 9 to 18%. And the truth is that, you know, it's a smaller secondary effect. It's not going to be, you know, something that you should go and say, I'm a type O, I'm all set. You know, I'm going to go out there and not wear my mask and so on. No, don't do that. But if you're a doctor and, you know, if your doctor says, you know, I've got some bad news, you've got COVID and you're admitted to the hospital, the doctors will probably be watching you much more carefully because that's where it really starts to become life and death.
All right. Fred, we've reached a point in Michigan where we kind of seem to be at this plateau. I've been looking at the numbers, like 200 new cases a day and roughly 20 deaths a day. Is that what you think we can continue to expect going forward, or is it going to gradually go down even from that?
We don't know. There are a couple of different factors that we're not sure about so far. The first is we're pretty sure about the social distancing. So the social distancing, we know that if we go ahead and socially distance, we're going to reduce the number of infections generally overall across all of Europe, and we've done the study around by about 30%. So that's a big factor, right? That's a big infection factor. And we also know that we're going to reduce the R by quite a bit. If we can get the R below 1, then in fact we should actually reduce, right? The reproductive level of 1 means you infect 1 for every 1 that's there. That's a break even. Every time you get infected, you'll have one more created. That's a break even. When you get below 1, then you're starting to beat the virus, and then you can start to beat the virus back. So we you know, if we're able to socially distance sufficiently, hygiene sufficiently, and especially if we're able to get a drug or a vaccine, at that point, you know, we'll really be able to beat back the virus and get below R1. But we have a long way to go. What we're doing is we're starting to get to an equilibrium in most places where we've socially distanced, and that's in the East and the Upper Midwest, where we're doing pretty well. We're keeping the virus at bay. Unfortunately, the southern states and the western states are having a lot of trouble right now. I don't know if you've been looking at the news, but you know, Florida's going overboard. Texas has had 3 straight days of world record, you know, numbers. South Carolina's not doing very well, and those were the states, unfortunately, that you know, opened up early and didn't socially distance probably as much as some of the other states. So we're seeing some of those effects. In the West, also Arizona, California, starting to come back a little bit. As well. And now, of course, you find out that China's coming back. And that's the one that really scares people, because China's about 8 weeks ahead of us. And what happened, you know, Wuhan had that big outbreak. And then Beijing was really carefully sheltering and trying to avoid getting any virus into Beijing. They were really worried about that because Beijing's tight. Now they found the virus in Beijing. And despite all their efforts, they found 79 cases in the last couple of days of new COVID cases that they can't really trace. It's all traced back to a market, in a fresh market in Beijing. But that's worrisome, because it means that even a country that's completely suppressed the virus, understood where all the new viral load was coming from, had a lot of suppression factors in place, still had a rebound. So if they have a rebound, then the risk is that the thinking is, we're going to have one too, because we're not quite as stringent even as they are. They have some real.
Let me ask you something on more of a personal level. My daughter lives in Seattle. My grandson is almost two. I've only seen him a couple of times. She's really wants me to come out and see him. I am real hesitant about getting in an airplane for 4 or 5 hours with a bunch of strangers and flying to Seattle. And I don't know what to tell her. You're shaking your head, so I think it's probably a bad idea, right?
Yeah, we're finding more and more that those long plane trips are really dangerous. There was a lot of Los Angeles turns out to have been seeded by one surgeon who was on a plane from New York, flew across the Atlantic, flew across from a nonstop flight from New York to L.A., got there, died 2 days later of COVID, and no one said anything. I mean, nobody knew on the plane that they were infected, and of course that seeded a lot of what happened in L.A., which is having a big outbreak. So if you want a plane, can you drive? That would be an option. Can you drive it?
2,000 miles. It's a bit of a drive,
just a bit.
But it is. But so here's the deal. If you get on the plane, step one is you want to get there safely. So drive your own car. And then, when you get into the plane, it's nice to be able to have all your hand wash all that stuff down, keep it wet, 3 seconds of wetness. It can't dry off. It can't be just a wipe. It's got to be wet. And then, and that means spray everything, and seat belts, it covers the window shades, right? The tray tables, your armrests.
Oh, yeah. You can't touch anything.
Whole 9 yards. wear your gloves, right? Bring your hand sanitizers. Tell the people that you don't want any service. Thank you very much. Sit by a window. If you have to have a choice, you have the people try to keep at least two rows in front and behind you open. Fly first class. Don't do it right, because that gives you more social distancing if you can afford it. Check all your bags. don't screw around with getting up, breathing on people. Exhaling deeply when you're inhaling, when you're rolling your bags in, check all that crap. Get there, and then the problem is that if you're worried about infecting your granddaughter, you have to wait 14 days, right? Because you don't know you won't know for at least 5.5 days. You got to wait, as we said last time. You have to wait that long to get diagnosed. Takes you a day and a half to get the cycle done. At that point, it may or may not be correct, but about 80% chance you'll know if it's correct or not. And then you got to wait all that time. I'd say at least 10 days before you see any symptoms, and then you can see her. But that's a long. So you may as well drive out there, enjoy yourself, drive back, and you'll see her more than you would if you flew.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. I now have ammunition to share with my daughter, because I was saying I didn't think it was a good idea. Not to mention that I'm a senior citizen now, so that puts me in a high risk group. Right?
It's more dangerous for you than it is for your daughter.
Yeah,
is the truth. Seattle's in pretty good shape. As far as the COVID virus goes, I guess they have some things going on downtown with the protests, but that's happening everywhere. But overall, Washington State is coming up a little bit, but it's not so bad. Michigan's it's better for them to come visit you.
Yes, I'll talk to her.
Well, my son's getting on an airplane next week, but he's only flying to Minneapolis. His environmental consulting company's cleaning up a toxic waste site in Minnesota, and they want him there for 10 days. So,
That's about an hour flight or something?
Yeah, an hour and 15 minutes. Yeah. So that's not quite as dangerous, I wouldn't think, but I'll be sure to tell them to wipe everything down.
Well, here. All right. Well, we've actually run out of time. We're at 3:01.
Next time. We'll talk about other things next time. I've got some interesting survey data from what epidemiologists think versus what the general public thinks. We'll go over that. It'll be fun.
All right.
We'll get you on next week, and you can share that data.
Love it. Appreciate it, you guys. Hope everything's going well. Have a great trip out there, and we'll see you soon.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Want to thank Fred Brown, our epidemiology expert, and thank all of our guests here today. We'll be back at 2 o'clock Eastern time next Monday. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching MITechNews.tv from PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news.